While Beijing is saying all the right things, we're just not seeing similar results in the actual outcome.
Discussion of North Korea dominated sidelines of the recent G20 summit. It's Tuesday, July 11th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also online at Facebook on VOA Asia. Also ahead, the latest on China's ailing Nobel laureate, the hunt for a terror leader. Relax at a Cambodian luxury resort, turning dangerous gas into stone, Hollywood in China. Stay with us right now for VOA Asia. On the sidelines of last week's G20 summit, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said President Donald Trump and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping had substantive discussions about North Korea. Much of their conversation dealt with trade, as China is North Korea's largest trading partner. James Kim, a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, tells VOA he believes to a point that more pressure on Chinese trade with North Korea is the correct move at this time.
But it's unclear to me where the breaking point is for China to change its decision on continuing to support North Korea through these trades. So until we have a better sense about the breaking point for Beijing, basically it's not clear to me that even a secondary sanction of this sort will work in the short term. Now, if we take this into the long run, and if we could sustain pressure on both North Korea and those companies that are engaged in these trades that are illegal with the North Korean government, then we might see some results, but nothing in the short term.
Kim says he feels targeting Chinese companies that do business with North Korea may not increase enough additional financial pressure on Pyongyang.
It's a good starting point, but it's not clear to me to what extent, once you start to enforce these sanctions and impose them on a third party, that you're going to get the Chinese government to actually move in meaningful ways on the North Korean issue.
China says it is complying with existing United Nations sanctions against North Korea, but its actual record remains in question.
The Chinese government has said that in the past. We found out that the Chinese companies were still engaged in these kinds of illicit trades. Hongxiang is a very good example of that. We also see indications of continuing trade throughout the first quarter of this year between China and North Korea. We see evidence also of coal trade happening through the satellite imagery. So on the one hand, while Beijing is saying all the right things, we're just not seeing similar results in the actual outcome.
Following a meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Germany, U.S. President Donald Trump said there will be success on North Korea, although Mr. Trump conceded it may take longer than he would like.
I think it just simply means that he's not going to be able to deliver on the North Korean issue as quickly as he'd like, that he will continue to do what he needs to do on that front to eventually reach denuclearization.
North Korea on Sunday warned last week's drill involving two U.S. bombers with fighter escort risked pushing the peninsula to the tipping point of war. A state-run newspaper described the peninsula as the world's biggest tinderbox and warned the U.S. is playing with fire. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Suspected suicide blast kills district police chief in Pakistan. Japan's leader sees popularity sink, seeks cabinet shuffle. With eye on China, India, U.S., and Japan conduct naval drills. Documentary hopes to spur debate on education in Myanmar's Rakhine State. China's ambition, U.S. retreat, on show in Serbian factory town. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's much more, when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Two Western physicians, having assessed the medical condition of ailing Chinese dissident and Nobel Peace laureate Liu Xiaobo, said he can be moved abroad safely for treatment, but it needs to happen soon. University of Texas cancer specialist Joseph Herman and Germany's Markus Büchler of the University of Heidelberg said Liu and his family have requested the remainder of his care to be provided in Germany or the United States. The 61-year-old Liu was placed on medical parole late last month and transferred to a hospital in the northeast city of Shenyang after being diagnosed with terminal liver cancer in May while serving an 11-year prison sentence for inciting subversion of state power by co-authoring a charter on democratic reform. The hospital on Saturday said he was too sick to travel. Human Rights Watch China researcher Sophie Richardson tells VOA's Victor Beatty the two doctors were simply performing their duties and medically assessing what is possible.
In doing so, whether intentionally or not, I think they're making very clear that the only obstacle to fulfilling both what they think is best as medical professionals and what Leo clearly said to them is his preference, you know, the only obstacle to letting him leave the country to get medical treatment is what Beijing decides to do. You know, they've removed sort of the medical questions from the equation and now made it a wholly political discussion.
If, in fact, he's allowed to leave, and of course Beijing has to sign off on that, is he released from China's control?
Well, I can imagine that Beijing is weighing up its options right now and contemplating ways to potentially let him go, but to keep him silent. I assume their primary lever in thinking that through is Liu Xia and possibly not letting her go with him. You know, whether that's a deal that Liu Xiaobo and Liu Xia would accept is, of course, an entirely separate matter. We've certainly seen the Chinese government use all sorts of tactics to try to control people even when they've left the country, typically by tormenting their family members who are still inside China.
So basically his wife could be left as some sort of a negotiating pawn in this situation.
Well, they've been doing that for the last decade, so I'm not sure why they would change gears on that front now. She's been treated abominably ever since he's been prosecuted on this latest round of trumped-up charges. She spent the last 7 years under house arrest. I don't think that Xi Jinping and his cronies are shy about using those kinds of tactics.
Well, Liu's family and himself have indicated a desire to travel abroad. Were you surprised that China allowed these foreign doctors in, knowing the risks that come with that?
A little bit, yes. I think they're feeling a certain amount of pressure, particularly while Xi Jinping was at the G20 this week. I think they've realized they're a bit damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they don't let foreign doctors have access to him, you know, the allegations will be that he was not given adequate treatment. They can now, to some extent, say they have allowed that. And indeed, the state media has all day today been trumpeting the fact that the foreign doctors said the care that Liu Xiaobo is currently getting is quite good. It, of course, leaves unanswered the question of, you know, had he been in the care of foreign doctors for the last 7 years, would the outcome be different? Would they have started treating him much more aggressively, you know, months or even years ago?
Sophie Richardson said it's good to see the Chinese government bend a bit in this case to ensure that Liu's last days, months, or years are less awful. Happening now in Asia, India, the United States, and Japan have deployed some of their largest warships and submarines in the Indian Ocean for annual naval exercises. The naval drills have expanded in the last 2 years amid growing concerns over Chinese maritime assertiveness. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're spending part of your day with us on VOA Asia. A second month of fighting between government troops and Muslim rebels in a southern Philippine city is turning to a search for a man sought by Manila as well as the United States for his leadership in terrorism over the past 20 years. Philippine troops believe Insulan Toti Haplon may be hiding in the largely demolished city of Marawi. Troops attacked Marawi May 23rd because they feared Haplon's historically violent Abu Sayyaf group was forming links with another rebel organization there. Haplon's death or capture would end the direct influence of a man who has helped lead Abu Sayyaf, a group known for kidnapping foreign tourists and beheading some since 1997. Eduardo Araral Mindanao native and an associate professor of the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, says Hapalon is very well known in the area.
I think he's a legend for his exploits in kidnapping high-profile tourists. And as a result, he's got lots of money, and money has bought him a lot of guns and followers.
Hapalon is now the leader of one Abu Sayyaf faction, eventually moved to the nearby Philippine province of Lanao del Sur to establish an Islamic State caliphate in a larger area. 3 years ago, he pledged allegiance to Islamic State, and last year, the terrorist group based in Iraq and Syria is said to have endorsed him as its emir in Southeast Asia. Eduardo RL says if Hapalon were captured or killed, Abu Sayyaf could regroup after a period of splintering. Another 19 Muslim rebel groups also operate around Sulu Sea and the Philippine island of Mindanao, where related violence has left about 120,000 people dead since the 1960s. Ethnic Moro followers of Islam who reached Mindanao centuries ago resent the Catholic Philippine majority for what they see as unequal rights to resources in the chronically impoverished South. Miriam Coronel Ferrer, a University of Philippines political science professor, says their anger hatched some of the rebel groups.
The way that the Marawi impasse can escalate is if the other groups in the other area start to move. The survivors, they will regroup somehow. Those who are still out there will be regrouping. But in what form, under whose new leaders? It's Naji Hapilon, we're not sure where he is.
After Abu Sayyaf kidnapped 20 tourists from a resort in 2001 and beheaded an American, the United States indicted Hapalon in absentia. The U.S. is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information that helps capture or convict the 51-year-old man the FBI describes as slim and 5 feet 6 inches tall, with possible travel access to Malaysia and Saudi Arabia. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has offered the equivalent of $344,000 for the, quote, neutralization of Hapalon. Media outlets in the country said in June. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China says the United States has apologized for a White House statement incorrectly calling Xi Jinping the president of the Republic of China. Xi is the president of the People's Republic of China, while the Republic of China refers to Taiwan, which Beijing considers a breakaway province awaiting reunification. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, luxury resorts in Cambodia are helping to attract millions of foreign visitors to the once devastated country. As VOA Asia's David Bird tells us, the tourism industry is fueling a revival in Cambodia's economy.
A client at the Navutu Dreams Resort and Wellness Retreat receives a Tibetan sonic therapy treatment to help realign her body's energy fields. In another darkened room, another client is getting a four-hands massage where two therapists work with customers to relieve stress and muscle tension. These are just a couple of the services offered at the resort, which is just 20 minutes from Angkor Wat, one of the top tourist destinations in Cambodia. The resort covers 1.5 hectares of landscaped tropical gardens and includes 3 swimming pools and 28 guest houses. Sarah Moya is the resort's general manager.
Here we go beyond typical spa. Here we offer gentle fasts and detoxing for people who are stressed, for people who just want to feel more fit. We take that into the level as we offer wellness cuisine, and that's reflected in our menus from breakfast down to dinner. And we also offer alternative healing for people who would like to get de-stressed of their stresses with chakra balancing, with a Tibetan sound therapy.
Guests can find accommodations for very reasonable prices, with a room starting at $80 a night, and that is helping draw tourists to the area. Services are also competitively priced, with a full 60-minute massage starting at just $38. Axel van Leer is a tourist from Antwerp, Belgium.
Alles voor zover compleet naar wens.
Everything is completely to our liking so far. The food is perfect, all fresh. The staff are obliging, friendly, and always at your service. Every question gets answered with a smile.
Marissa Carruthers of Asia Life, Cambodia's leading English language magazine, warns, however, that not all spas are created equal, and guests should be discerning.
One of the things I would recommend looking out for when you're trying to choose a spa is to check whether the staff have been trained properly, and also to check maybe the products that are being used to make sure they're quality lotions and oils and that kind of thing. But Cambodia's got some fantastic spas that would rival the ones that we're used to back in the West at a fraction of the price.
According to the Phnom Penh-based Bodia Spa, there are now around 100 spas or wellness centers in Cambodia. Last year, tourism brought in more than 5 million visitors, with total receipts of more than $3.2 billion. That has helped people like Sok Sut, the chief massage therapist at Frangipani Spa in Siem Reap, to prosper.
I often had to work overtime days and nights without any time off if urgent work was assigned. After that, my aunt got me a new job as a cleaner at the Frangipani Spa owner's house. 2 years later, I was promoted to work at the spa itself and to train as a massage therapist. This has now become a career path for me because it has opened many doors of opportunity. Plus, I was able to take English lessons and I get to meet customers from many countries.
Cambodian Ministry of Tourism statistics show that visits typically drop in the hotter summer months but then rise sharply in autumn and spike near the Christmas holidays. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a government-run laboratory in India announced it has developed a portable kit which can determine whether a sample contains beef in 30 minutes. A number of police departments will use the kits to minimize arrests and detentions of people suspected of selling or eating beef, which is banned in several states. No waiting. At VOA Asia Facebook for the latest stories, visit now. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, while our fossil fuel-dependent civilization keeps releasing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, scientists are racing to find a viable method for lowering the emissions of the most harmful one, carbon dioxide. It can be captured and stored underground, or it can be turned into a harmless rock. The price is steep, but VOA's George Pudich notes the cost of doing nothing could be higher.
10 years ago, the Icelandic public utility company Reykjavik Energy started a project called CarbFix, aimed at testing how CO2, a byproduct of the geothermal steam that turns its turbines, could be captured and permanently stored underground.
Basically, what we're doing is just mimicking what is happening in nature and speeding it up.
The Helishaidi power plant sits atop an inactive volcano that still smolders deep below, creating steam, which is a free and sustainable source of energy, but also carries a number of greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide. According to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the release of CO2 into the atmosphere is the main driver of global warming, and observations by the U.S. space agency NASA confirm this. In the Helishaidi power plant, CO2 is captured, mixed with water, and pumped back underground.
The dissolved CO2 goes into the basalt at between 1 to 2 kilometers depth, and there natural reactions occur between the basalt and the CO2 that turn the CO2 into stone within just 1 to 2 years. And once it's turned into stone, it's stable like that for millions of years.
Scientists say if a cheaper method of capturing CO2 could be found, the ocean floor of the U.S. Pacific Northwest, India, and South America could be a good place to store it.
The ocean floor is basaltic, so if we can find the technology to inject a mixture like this into the ocean floor, then we have huge possibilities in storing carbon there.
The International Energy Agency says carbon capture and storage technologies will have an expanding role in the coming decades as oil-producing nations try to extract as much as possible from their slowly depleting oil fields. So far, only about 27 million tons of CO2 are captured and stored annually, as the global release of CO2 in 2014 was almost 1,000 billion tons. It is only a small fraction of what needs to be done. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
In recent years, China has become an increasingly attractive market for Hollywood producers, despite tight state controls. Chinese investors have also been looking at opportunities in the U.S. film and entertainment industry. As VOA's Elizabeth Lee tells us from Los Angeles, while some people express concern over these growing ties, others say they're mutually beneficial.
When it comes to movies, the ties between Hollywood and China are deepening.
When people collaborate on the making of anything artistic, there's an emotional pull inside of that. And if it works well, you not only have a great business, you also have a great diplomatic cohesion between the two countries.
In August, U.S. Asia Institute trustee and Hollywood executive Chris Fenton will be taking a group of U.S. lawmakers to China to look at the country's entertainment and media industry and encourage more Chinese investment in Hollywood.
It's a very large piece of the pie because it's roughly $7 billion, and with the U.S. in a flat sort of growth period in the traditional exhibition space of movies at roughly $11 billion, you can see how close China is becoming to being the number one market in the world.
China is exerting soft power through media and the movies to make itself more attractive to the outside world. Secondly, they also want to compete with Hollywood. Film and China expert Stanley Rosen says there is also another benefit to China with deeper relations and more Chinese investments in Hollywood.
They're also trying to learn as much as they can about storytelling, marketing, distribution, and that's one of the reasons for the investment.
Some critics have warned that too much Chinese investment in Hollywood is dangerous. Last year, 16 members of Congress wrote a letter to the U.S. Government Accountability Office expressing concern about what they called China's efforts to censor topics and exert propaganda controls in American media.
I don't see it as a particular problem at this point because most of those investments do not come with any strings attached. Because Hollywood studios are well aware that if they start making films that are so blatantly favoring China, that there's going to be a backlash.
Rosen says even if films show China in a positive light, Beijing's hardline policies overshadow attempts to soften its image through such soft power projects.
Arresting lawyers, human rights lawyers, kidnapping people from Hong Kong or Thailand, all of these things affect Chinese soft power, no matter what they're spending in terms of money. So everybody assumes anything that happens that's China-related, the government has to be involved in some sense.
But on the industry level, China is benefiting from closer ties with Hollywood by learning how to make better movies and marketing them. For those in Hollywood, working with China is simply smart economics.
If you're thinking like a business person, there is a certain creative vision you should have for the content you're making that if you want to call it self-censorship, that's fine. Or you call it just good business.
Good business for Hollywood right now means wooing China and its box office. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is available on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're also on our website, of course, voanews.com. And we'd love to hear from you. You can do that via Facebook at VOA Asia, or you can send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden and David Bird. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.